Hey there. Welcome to the show. Wow, you know what? I can't believe we are pushing through January already. And, you know, so much to talk about. So just so you know, I'm going to continue to focus this year's show. So 2024 is going to be about hardcore real estate. You know, I've got a bunch of experts that are going to be joining me throughout the year. A lot of our narrative is going to be focusing on, you know, things that are going to be necessary for you to either buy, sell throughout the year, keeping your eye on the Bank of Canada. That's going to be huge. And of course, one of the things near and dear to my heart is real estate investment. And of course, you know, I don't like speculators. I'm more about long-term holds. So we are going to start off the new year, right? We have our simple seminar coming up on February the 3rd. That's a Saturday, 11 a.m. I'm trying to make it a little bit easier for people to attend, because if you do attend and you are one of the 150 people here, you stand a chance at winning a down payment. That's right. We've got the great down payment giveaway coming up at our next seminar webinar. Also on the webinar, you can also win. So we're not giving away just one, but we're doing two giveaways during our simple seminar webinar. First one of the year. What a great way to start 2024. If you ended up winning the down payment for one of the investment properties, a one bedroom that we have featured in London. So really exciting stuff. Go to thesimpleinvestor.com to register. You don't want to miss out. Hey, by the way, if you're not following me on Instagram or YouTube, make sure you do. We've got some really cool things happening in 24. You know, I will tell you, my simple podcast seems like it's getting a huge amount of traction. It's me, you know, without a muzzle. And I'm having a lot of fun with it with my producers and, you know, really looking forward to keeping expanding. We're talking about everything to do when we talk about investment real estate on the Simple Podcast. And so we are going to uncover a lot of situations for people, try to give you some great advice, and you don't want to miss out on it. So for us, it's a very, very exciting 2024. So much more to talk about. But hey, you know what? I may as well start off with having one of my past guests. He is an expert when we talk about the construction industry. The president of ResCon, Richard Lyle, is going to be joining me. And ResCon is the Residential Construction Council of Ontario. Richard's joined me in the past quite a few times, and he's really, really knowledgeable. And you know what? It's incredible to be able to have him join me on the show. So I want to start off, you know, Richard, hey, listen, Happy New Year, and we're into 2024.
I know. When did that happen, right? I used to think ahead and think, boy, I wonder if I'll ever get there. But here we are.
Here we are. And, you know, you've got obviously an incredible resume. You know, one of the reasons why, for our listeners' sake, the reason why I like having Richard join me is that he's just very candid, very upfront, you know, doesn't pull any punches. This is something that's really necessary. Richard, I think you need to teach a course to the politicians, you know, if you wouldn't mind, you know, kind of coaching them on how to deal with, you know, the residential construction industry. I got to tell you, you know, the promises, as you and I discussed earlier last year, the promise of construction, there's the wishful thinking, there's the impossible, and then there was something that gets done. And, you know, I'm still waiting for the what did get done last year. So maybe give me a recap in 2023. What actually happened in the construction field?
Well, actually, our sales collapsed at the end of the year, and starts were actually falling. Although I got a call the other day from an erstwhile journalist who I have a lot of time for, said, how could I explain the good news that building permits were up 2.4% in Ontario while they were down 2.8% across Canada? And I said, that's not actually good news. We're supposed to be doubling housing production. And just because you get a building permit doesn't mean you build. There's a lot of other factors that go into that. You want to get ready if you're that far down the pipe on a project, but it doesn't mean to say that you're going to go ahead. And of course, as you know, everybody's looking to where interest rates are going to go. And there's a lot of, you know, wishful thinking there and biased confirmation that they're going to drop quite a bit, but in some minds, but I don't see that happening. So last year was, I think, a precursor to this year coming up, where I think a lot of chickens are going to come home to roost. And that's because, you know, starts are actually going to fall even further. But immigration is not going to stop, and population growth is not going to stop. And while we do need the immigration, you know, we really do need to get serious about growth management planning in this country. And so far, we haven't been doing that very well. And in fact, you know, I think we've got a bit of a crisis there. And we have a crisis in public administration, generally speaking, that a lot of things that are supposed to be happening are not working out properly. I mean, take your pick, healthcare, you know, LRTs, and certain infrastructure problems, and of course, housing, of course, which is huge. It's the biggest thing that people spend money on in their lives. And here we are. I mean, we've got a disaster on our hands. Like Marlon Bray just wrote a thing today saying, what comes after a crisis? And I said, a catastrophe. And that's where we're headed.
Yeah. Well, doom and gloom of 24. Thanks, Richard, for your insightful insight there. Yeah, you know, but and I have to concur with you on a lot of things. You know, with a lot of the promises, obviously, you know, the green belt was probably, I think, for Ontario, the biggest news headline for the year, for 2023.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
you know, I think the fact that they had to retract everything, and to the point where it actually put a lot of developers even further back, you know, the commitments they had made, and then they realized, obviously, the financial aspect of things. We could talk about the Bank of Canada rate in a second, but the financial aspect of things, you know, some of the builders were willing to suck it up and move the ball forward because they were given this, you know, open ability to start looking at some new land, and they went, okay, tell you what, we've got a short opportunity, let's do it. And then I think what ended up happening was is that when you got your hand in the cookie jar, you pull it back and they say, well, I'm never going to ask for another cookie. And so here we are today, where we've got a bunch of the builders that were planning have now canceled their projects.
That's right. I mean, you know, hey, there's no question that set us back a year. Because, of course, not only there was the time spent in the introduction of those changes, plus the boundary changes, too. That was the second shoe to drop there at the end of the year, was the walking back all the boundary changes. And, you know, quite a few babies got thrown out with the bathwater on that one. And it was, you know, it was a gong show.
I gotta tell you, you said, I think it set it back a year. I actually think it set us back 5 years, and let me clarify it, because for me, I look at it and say, look, you know, they got their hands slapped, and it wasn't the builders that did, but with now they're going to be very, very gun shy going near anything that the government's going to offer them. You know, here's an incentive. So great. We're going to get our architects. We're going to get our developers. We're going to start looking at infrastructure. Like, these guys spend a lot of money rushing to those properties, thinking that they're going to start putting everything into place, you know, because it's, you know, what people don't understand is before its shovel goes in the ground, there is millions spent in any subdivision just to get it to the point where it can be a subdivision.
Absolutely.
And so these guys went running full tilt, got excited, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, by the way, you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, that's a very good point, and I would agree with you on that. I mean, my timeline was a little different, but what you're talking about there is credibility. And so what that did to the government's credibility was, you know, some serious damage. And they have they got a big hill to climb now to get back up there. And there's other issues that were ignored while this was going on. And they now have to be addressed. And it's a matter of necessity now. We no longer have an option. But unfortunately, we're at the stage now where we still don't have a process to address the housing crisis. And by process, I mean, you know, there are these various plans out there, but they're not aligned. But even worse than that is that, you know, a good plan depends on a good process for implementation. You know, we still don't have really a national plan, and there is no process. So, you know, how are we supposed to get to these various, you know, 1.5 million, 3.5 million, or whatever else like that. I mean, you know, it's kind of, and then we have these fits and starts going on. Oh, with this announcement for 4 years, but it won't start till next year. And then it's contingent on this. And then, oh, there's a bunch of bureaucrats that are going to have to review each application. You know, it goes on from there. It's like the Toronto housing plan, you know, the 5-year plan where they didn't get a single shovel in the ground in 5 years. you know, we have to stop doing this. We can't afford to do it anymore. And we're seeing the evidence of that now, as you know. You know, we're losing some of our best and brightest. They're moving. I think the last number I saw was 40% of our, you know, sort of top graduates type of thing are looking to live somewhere else because they can't afford to live here, because our cost of housing is just too high and unnecessarily so. And that's not, that's because when you break down the cost of housing and look at it, look at, for example, the tax fees and levies at 31%. No other jurisdiction does that. I mean, we tax housing like booze, which does not make any sense at all. If we did that with food, there'd probably be riots in the streets, but housing's a little more difficult to pin down that way. But yeah.
Yeah, and of course you've got, you know, City of Toronto pushing the property taxes up, so that makes it even less affordable and everything. You know, when we talk about affordability, you know, Richard, that's one of the toughest things to have a discussion about, because what some people deem affordable, other people say is not a chance. You know, like there's always perception, and I think that's the problem with if we focus our narrative on, let's say, Toronto proper. I think our narrative is completely different than if you and I talk about London, Ottawa, Windsor, you know, all the other areas. Like, affordability is kind of a moving scale. But, you know, I want you to stay put. Folks, I've got Richard Lyle joining me. Richard's been on the show a whole bunch of times over the years. Really enjoy his narrative. He is the president of ResCon, which is the Residential Construction Council of Ontario. And you know what? If you're not following me, make sure you do. Instagram, TheSimpleInvestor1. When we come back, I've got more with Richard Lyle. Stay put. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. If you're just tuning in, my guest right now is Richard Lyle. And just so you know, Richard is the president of ResCon, Residential Construction Council of Ontario. Richard has joined me numerous times over the years, and always a pleasure having him on the show with me. Richard, just before the break, you and I, we were going down the path of what we call affordability. And, you know, one of the reasons why, obviously, we are losing some of our top producers, you know, let's say south of the border, is just because of our cost. You know, you and I talked about this. We've talked about, you know, taxation. We've talked about property taxes. We talk about insurance. You know, insurance is just astronomical. I mean, it's crazy when you know, house, car, everything. It's unbelievable where they've taken it. And in the same breath, you know, we look at, you know, the recent announcement that CPP, you know, you got to contribute more. There's a lot of people that are never going to see the money from the CPP, even though they got to contribute more. You know, could be due to death. They have too strong a pension. And then, of course, we take a look at the fact that we've got a whole bunch of people getting a paycheck from the government. And I don't mean government employees. I mean just in general, people that are drawing down. And, you know, it seems to be that we're in a position right now that when you and I talk about affordability, there's only one way that we should be doing it. First and foremost, development charges should be questioned through the yin-yang. Because right now, you're in excess of $130,000 a door in the Toronto area as development charges. So folks, that means that the government, before they will issue the building permit to a developer, and this is why developers are now backing up, is that they have to write a check for $130,000 for the unit you're going to buy. And yeah, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars that these developers have to pony up to get building permits to be able to put that shovel in the ground. Richard, I don't know how we're going to do it. I don't know how we can physically, I don't know how we can financially do it. At this point, I think that the entire government development system is broken to a level that it's never been broken before. And in what we're looking at, I don't know how we move forward.
Well, you know, I think there is a way to move forward. There is always a way. I mean, all the problems that we have with the housing supply chain have all been fixed in one way or another, or aren't problems in other jurisdictions. So this isn't sort of the unknown shot to Mars. I mean, it's, you know, we can do these things. The question is, can the three levels of government, you know, Conservative, Liberal, and NDP in Toronto, can they get together and actually come up with a real plan, right? And a real process to solve this. We're ready, willing, and able to work with them. We've proposed this. you know, but it's,
but you know, yeah. you mentioned parties, but now we got to talk levels of government, right? Because now, you know, you got the Fed coming in, you know, the federal government pretending like their big brother coming to save the day. You've got typically the provincial government that has pretty much the most power when we talk about it. You know, you've got the housing minister who's got a little bit more power that they can exercise nowadays. And then, of course, you've got the municipalities. So not only do you have, you know, three levels of government, you've got three parties, four parties, five parties, whatever people want to call the parties nowadays. But, you know, the party's not happening, Richard. The problem that we have right now today is, yes, you as a business person can come up with a solution. Us as a society, that's where the solution is really falling apart.
Well, you're absolutely right. It's a bit of a Rubik's Cube or a Gordian knot, you know, pick your pick your handle for it. But we have a crisis in growth management planning in this country. It's bigger than just a housing crisis. And quite often we've got too many sort of non-technocratic people responsible for technocratic issues that they actually don't fully understand. So the first thing they do, and what has become the flavor of the day in government now, is the first thing you do is go hire a consultant. And, you know, hence at the federal level, no surprise, expenditures on outside consultants, notwithstanding the massive increase in staffing, which has been about 80% of job growth, you know, it has been in government, is these outside consultants are at $17.7 billion.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how do you and I get on that?
I know. And then they actually turned around the other day and hired KPMG to do a report, a consulting report on how to manage consultants better. And I'm thinking, isn't that a conflict of interest? Because KPMG's probably got $1 billion worth of work out of the government right now. So what are they going to say? Hey, you know, like, you can't make this stuff up. And they're borrowing money left, right, and center still, you know. And when you're supposed to be in a recovery, that's when you stop borrowing and spending. You start saving a little bit. So their debt repayment costs are going through the roof right now with the interest rates. And then everybody's running around saying, you know, and all this bias confirmation that rates are going to go down precipitously, you know. And, you know, the real story there is, no, that's not going to happen. And by the way, if it does happen, we're in serious trouble, because that means things have really collapsed. And the other thing that really concerns me, and going off topic here a little bit, is we've really diverged from the U.S. You know, I wrote a thing the other day, little comment, because in the U.S. there was a report saying they had all this new supply of rental apartments down there over the last 5 years that came on the market, and now rents are falling down in the U.S. because of that. We're going in exactly the opposite direction, right? Rents are going up because our supply is falling, and that those trends are continuing. So the further we diverge from the U.S., it's going to hurt us badly. I mean, it's going to hurt investment here. It already is, I should say, but it's going to hurt a lot more. So, you know, but the government, you know, it's bloated. And that's where some of your productivity numbers are coming from, because, you know, it's like that interview that was done by the guy who ran that RiveCan app, and the MP was saying, asking him, what is it that you do? And the guy couldn't answer the question. He started mumbling stuff about governance, and then he started talking about his indigenous employees, and the MP said, just an hour and a half ago, you said you don't have any employees. What are you talking about? I mean, it's just like, and this guy got $56 million out of the government, right?
Wow, that's crazy.
I know.
So let's talk about immigration, okay?
Yes.
Obviously, one of the big issues that we're facing, because it's putting so much strain on any inventory. You know, and normally when we talk about immigration, we normally talk about the rental market. You know, people typically just don't come strolling into the country and buy property. You know, that's one of the things. So if we talk about immigration, you know, the numbers, of course, they say numbers don't lie, but we know politicians do. So when they started telling us how many people were immigrating, you know, by the time the actual numbers were counted, like, you know, more than 1 million more than they actually had assumed were coming into the country.
Well, you know, there's another one, right? I mean, it's like, it. You just, when the Minister of Immigration a few months ago said they're going to start aligning housing policy with immigration policy, and I'm thinking, wow, this is the fourth quarter of 2023, good timing. But they need to align a lot of other things. But if you look at immigration, yeah, they doubled immigration, no explanation given. And by the way, we do need immigration. I'm not an anti-immigration guy at all. But they doubled immigration without regard to the impact on health care or other things. Then, at the same time, you had this out-of-control international student thing going on, where the amount of international students tripled over, 6 years?
Yep.
And then on top of that, and that's when I think it came out of one of the big banks, they came out with a report saying, oh, by the way, there's probably about 1 million more people here than you're actually counting, which no one denied. In fact, the estimate was actually it's a bigger number than that. And so, you know, this is a bigger problem that we have is the data that we're working off of is often inaccurate or just absent. And so they're making these decisions. And then the last thing I read on the immigration thing was that it was the whole policy was made up by some consulting company, apparently, or that's what was being alleged anyways. And it wouldn't surprise me. Who's running the shop here and who's aligning some of these critical issues? And they're pretty serious, right?
Yeah.
And we know now that the demand for housing's continuing because we know what the population growth is. We don't know what effect yet the leaky immigration or people leaving is going to have yet. We're not really sure about that, but we know that supply is going down. So if you've got a homelessness problem now, I'm not seeing anything or any kind of modeling on what that's going to look like in a year or two.
Yeah, and that's going to be pretty scary. Richard, I'm going to ask you to hold on for a minute. Sure. Folks, when we come back, I'm going to have Richard Lyle, and we're going to continue to talk about some of the things that we can look forward to in the future. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. So my guest this hour has been the president of ResCon, which is the Residential Construction Council of Ontario. I've got Richard Lyle talking to us. And, you know, it's been a really interesting catching up with you, Richard. You know, we do this every so many months per year, and it's been great having you on. And, you know, just before the break, of course, we were talking about immigration and, you know, the lack of numbers, which again, you would almost think that there should be somebody there at the border with a little ticker that just keeps counting, going, hey, there's one more, there's 100 more, there's 1,000 more, there's 1,000,000 more. It's amazing how you don't know how many people are coming into your country, and yet it's like open arms, kumbaya. Doesn't matter if you've contributed, not contributed. You know, healthcare system's going to take a hit. We've got to make sure we put a roof over everybody's head. Don't have enough roofs. You know, I can sit there and go on and on and on. And as a lot of people know, you know, I take some joy in, you know, showing the facts of the government's, you know, inadequacy of doing things, because at this stage they're putting us all with our backs against the wall. And you know, one of the things that you and I talked about earlier was the fact, of course, interest rates and the anticipation of interest rates going down. Of course, the Bank of Canada 2 years ago turned around and said, if we raise them, we're going to do it slowly. And sure enough, they decided to kick everybody while they're down and kick them very fast. And then today, as we listen to some of the narrative, they're saying, well, you know, we're thinking about bringing them down and, you know, we'll slowly manipulate it. And meanwhile, the pressure on the Canadian remains. I mean, you know, we've got families that are struggling. We've got more people coming into the country. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel? Do you have something for us?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I do. And I'll come to that. But unfortunately, sometimes you have to hit a wall before you get real change. Right. And we've been hitting a lot of speed bumps, and there have been some changes along the way recently on various odd little things like laneway housing and stuff like that, which were problems that should not have existed in the first place. We've got other issues that still need to be addressed. Priority routes and as of right zoning along them, where you've got transit lines and stuff like that. Now, on the bigger picture, where we're going, I think the federal and provincial government, I think they are finally getting the severity of this crisis. And I'm hoping, because I've talked to a number of people and said, why aren't you modeling these things? There is the technical capability of doing this. You can punch the numbers into a black box and see where you think you're going to come out. But for example, if our housing starts are going down now and the population is still going up, you think you got a homelessness problem now and, you know, a shelter problem and so on and so forth, and just a problem for average working people. I mean, if you think about that, the first-time homebuyer is out of the market. We can't build market housing for middle what we used to think were middle-class people before. We got to a point where, absurdly, I mean, people were starting to say, well, let's change the definition of affordability. Oh, that's great. You know, that's like we'll change the Canada food diet and write it up so you only need half the calories you thought you needed before. You know, it doesn't, you know, like those things. And now there's the talk about attainable housing. And I kind of like the word attainable in terms of attainable housing. But we don't have attainable housing when you're 84% of the average, you know, the median income in Toronto is needed to pay for shelter. Like, and that's a fairly short-term phenomenon, but mid to long-term, even short-term going into the future, that is a massive problem. So I think that if the levels of government can really get it together, and I think the extent of this crisis will force them to do that, I think that we can have some changes pretty short order. I'll give you one example. You know, they made the changes on the HST on purpose-built rental housing to get that going. And that made sense because, you know, the federal government, out of the 31% of the cost of new housing going into taxes, fees, and levies, the federal government was getting 39% and not putting much back in. Right. So they were quick to do that. You notice that? That was pretty quick.
Yep.
Well, you know, in principle, they should do it for owner-occupied housing and definitely for at least first-time home buyers, right, who are out of the market. We're killing them. You know, and these are you know, the people that we've talked about before, some of our best and brightest and so on and so forth. So at least do that, or, you know, get that going, make that announcement, say we're opening up the market to first-time home buyers. We're going to provide, you know, domestic, you know, Canadian, right here, not immigrants. I'm not talking about landed immigrants. I'm talking about, you know, like foreign investors or whatever. Sure. You have to be, you know, a Canadian citizen to have it then be a first-time home buyer, and boom, you could do something. Something like that would shock the market. And then on the main streets and arterial routes served by mass transit, just slam it with as-of-right zoning. You know, go up 12, 18 stories high. Yeah. And just do it. Get it done. I mean, they're various municipalities are fiddling around and fumbling with this stuff. Some of them are doing a great job, you know, and even, you know, like Mayor Chow, NDP, not my political preference, obviously, but you know, I got to hand it to her. She came out today and said to the feds, we're going to raise our taxes even further if you don't give us the $250 million for all these refugees we're getting that you let in because you didn't do your homework, you know, this kind of thing. And I can't fault her for that. And you know, so far she's actually been doing a pretty good job. Now,
I was just going to say, I think I won't weigh in on this one.
Yeah, no. But you know what I mean? You have to, like, I've seen some of the, you know, left-wing governments in certain jurisdictions do what you would consider sort of pretty conservative policy. So I'm not taking an ideological perspective on this in that regard. But I think, you know, and I think the Conservatives in Ontario, they were on the right track. They were doing the right things. And then they went off and got mixed up in all of this whole boundary thing. And, you know, as you say, it set us back 5 years. I'll go with that.
Well,
and
I think
that's unfortunate.
Yeah,
right?
I think one of the things that we should be looking at, and this is all serious, and when you and I calculate out numbers, you know, we talk about affordability, we talk about first-time home buyers. I think that there's going to be a changing of the minds. I think that people will turn around and increase density per unit.
Yeah.
In other words, I think your one-bedrooms will hold two or three people. I think your three-bedroom houses will hold six people. You know, I think that, you know, when you and I look back, just, you know, not to age us, but if we took a look at our typical wartime bungalows from the 50s and 60s, I mean, we grew up in 1,000-square-foot homes, three bedrooms, and you can have a family of five. So I think there's a certain entitlement that has to leave the market for certain affordability to come into play and how home ownership has to come into play. And if not, you know, the other thing I'm pretty sure, and you know, I do focus on the numbers, is the fact that the percentage of Canadians renting is going to continue to go up in comparison to ownership. And I think that we could soon approach, especially in the next decade, that we're going to see 45%, 50% of Canadians will be renting. And in the same breath, we can only do that if we have the mom and pop landlords or if we have purpose-built rentals being built. And I think that has got to be the main focus of the government in the future.
Well, you certainly right on the purpose-built rental, because that's the fastest way to get projects going and turned around and in high volume, because you're talking about big blocks of capital, big projects, and they can move very quickly. And so that's why I was kind of happy to see that they made the move on the purpose-built rentals. But that's only a small part of the market too, because nationally and even across Ontario, we still need, you know, low-rise housing.
Yep.
We need semis, we need singles,
yeah,
we need
totally.
Townhouses. And there are designs, we do, you know, and people would be amazed that we have various technical restrictions that make no sense that prevent us from actually building a bigger apartments. Like, for example, there is a restriction on a floor plate on mid and high rise buildings. They can only be 750 square meters. Why? Nobody really knows. We've got these angular restrictions. You know that whole shadowing
thing? Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's all goofy stuff. Where did that come from? Nobody knows, but it's in the code. We've got these architectural design committees that, you know, when people say, why does everything look so much the same? Well, that's what comes out at the end of a process where you've had government involvement and site plan and, oh, we don't like this and we don't like that. I mean, we've had legal battles where, you know, they want you to use a certain a building envelope material. Why? I mean, why are you involved in this? It you know, and then on the green building stuff, I mean, I just came out of a meeting. We've got a report coming out that says that the, you know, what we're looking at in terms of building code harmonization is actually going to result in less green building at greater cost.
I
kid you not.
So, Richard, I'm going to have you hold that thought. And okay. You know what? We're going to have you stay, but we're going to come back for one more segment. So, folks, Richard Lyle is with me. We're going to continue to talk about some of this stuff that's really important. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. Wow, I got to tell you, it's amazing how fast an hour goes by, especially when you have the right guests in the house. And I got Richard Lyle joining me. Just so you know, he is the president of ResCon. And, you know, one of the interesting things is that, you know, we talk about, and Richard's been on the show for years and always great catching up with him, but, you know, we could talk very openly about, you know, the government anticipation, expectation of the public, because what Richard has to deal with, because, you know, being the Residential Construction Council of Ontario, he's got to actually get all the players together. Okay, this is what they do. You know, they have to focus on being able to get this stuff built, getting all parties happy. You got to make sure the public is figuring it out. We got to make sure the government's figuring out. Richard, probably your biggest struggle is definitely the government. They're not helping as much as we need them to. But in the same breath, you know, one of the things that you and I have been able to discuss today, obviously, is the necessity of rentals. And you know, we hear pie in the sky numbers, and I, you know, every single time somebody comes up with a new number, and you know, it makes headlines. In fact, it's amazing how even your TV, you know, it'll spit out commercials where, you know, the provincial government is going to build 1.5 million homes in the next 10 years, in excess of what we're already doing. And for clarity, you know, Richard, I don't think my number's too far off, but we run about 220,000 new properties in Canada a year, brand new construction, give or take, you know, depending on the year, sometimes a little higher, a little lower, but roughly in that range. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. So then if we take a look at that, and now just hypothetically, to meet the requirement that the provincial government's saying, okay, which means that let's say Ontario is producing, you know, a good lion's share of it. Let's say they were doing 80,000 units, which, you know, maybe a little high, but let's say 80,000. Now you can dump another 150 into the mix. So we're going to knock out 230,000 units in Ontario in a year. What are the chances?
None. Zero. Hey, look, you know, you could technically do it if you amassed a massive amount of capital, built multiple factories across the province, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not going to happen, right? We don't have the materials. We don't have the workforce. We can turn to off-site construction, but that requires an enormous amount of capital investment. Who's going to make that capital investment? Because where's the market going to be, right? Now, areas where that has worked is where you have had some government involvement. Say, for example, take students' housing. We've got this massive shortage of students' housing. They're paying a good, you know, for the housing they're getting, they're paying a lot of money for it. So there is a market there. But who's going to pull that together and say, okay, we're putting out a tender for 5,000 units of students' housing? Then you'll get interest. You will get factories. You will get production, you know, that kind of thing. But until that gets organized, until there's a process there for it, based on a plan that has identified that, it's not going to happen. We're just flailing in the darkness.
Yeah, that sounds really what 2023 has been, is a lot of flailing, you know, and not a lot of, you know, more reaction than action itself. You know, everybody seems to be, you know, we screwed up. No, this is what we're going to do. You know, and it was interesting because we watched the federal government play the housing is not our main concern, and we do not have a whole lot of narrative into it. And then all of a sudden, oh no, we've always been about housing. You know, and every single politician that is existing federal government are all saying, what are you talking about? We promised housing forever. Really? Yeah. You haven't done anything in 8 years. Nothing. Yeah. Nada. You didn't throw one extra shovel like our averages.
They actually did worse because, you know, the HST on new housing was supposed to have been adjusted to inflation. And then when the prices really went up, the HST exploded. Then at the same time, development charges, you mentioned Toronto, 130,000 in DCs. That was $13,000 a decade ago. So, you know, where does that extra, how does someone whose real income, our real incomes haven't moved in 20 years, where are they supposed to come up with an extra $100,000 in down payment? And then worse, the young people that are expected to do that are told, well, you're not working as hard as we did in our generation. I mean, give them a break. You know, it's crazy. And you know, as you pointed out, the Fed's denying their role in this when they were making out like bandits.
Yeah.
They were getting about 40% of the total taxes, fees, and levies on new housing for years. Billions of dollars every year. And then they came out with their $4 billion housing accelerator fund, which is nice, you know, but that's $4 billion over what, 4 years? And then they got this other thing that's going to start in 2025. You know, that's like showing up at the Alamo about a month after the battle. You know, like it's now. We got the problem now. And 2024 is going to be a very hard year. Now, I mean, in 2024, the good news is, in an ironic way, it has taken so long to get things approved and whatever. We've still got quite a few projects, big projects in the pipeline. There's still some moving forward. Some have been saved by the HST break on purpose-built rental housing, which you're absolutely right. And by the way, on rental housing, I mean, this drives me nuts. The U.S. in the last 6 years had a rental housing production boom. We didn't. Yep. Our economies are very similar. We should have had the same thing happening. We did not, because our system discourages rental housing from being produced. And don't even get me onto the rental housing.
Yeah, but it's funny, you know, you mentioned the U.S. and, you know, I frequent down there and I go to different states, you know, the speed on what they can develop in comparison to, you know, Ontario, Canada, everything else. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, if you go down to certain areas, you go back 2 years later and there's towers standing there. And it's like, how did that happen? And it's almost like, you know, you think they need a little bit of rain and boom, they pop up. But it's amazing because their turnaround time is 18 to 24 months on some major builds. When we turn around and we can't even get a green light at 5 years in most cases here.
Yeah, and try and finance that, right? Try and find it. Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Richard, it's always a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for your candor. You know, it's always great. You know, you and I have such a great time on it. I look forward to chatting with you a little bit later on, you know, in the spring, and we'll see what happens. You know, we'll see what the Bank of Canada does. We'll see what obviously the government does. And again, thank you so much for joining me on the show. Always a pleasure.
Pleasure.
And so, folks, Richard Lyle, he is the president of ResCon. Look, you know what? You definitely want to follow him. Keep your eye on his articles because they are the truth. Like, you know, there's deciphering information. And that's one of the most important things we need to do because, you know, you get media fast and furious, all the social media, everything out there. But I can tell you everything that Richard has reported and talked about is actually hardcore facts. It's what's happening in the industry. And this is what we all need to do. We have to be aware of what is happening here in the country, how we get our stuff built, how it comes to fruition, and how it does not. And where is the stress in the system? Yeah, I mean, we all as Canadians want to sit there and, you know, we want to talk about home ownership. We want to talk about security. We want to talk about all these wonderful things that we should be entitled to. And yet the government, through their fake promises, continue to turn around and put a carrot out there that seems so far in advance. Their numbers don't make sense, nor will they ever. But if you're looking to have some numbers make sense, don't forget to join me coming up on February the 3rd. That's a Saturday for my simple seminar webinar. And you want to know some exciting things that are going to make sense? We are giving away two down payments, not one, but two of $56,000 during our seminar webinar. So one party will win one here in our seminar room and, of course, during our webinar. Our great down payment giveaway was such a huge success last year that we decided to do it again. We're trying to give real estate investors an opportunity to get into the market without having to come up with a down payment. I'm so excited about it. You know, we had three winners last year. We're really excited about this. What a way to start 2024. And we're going to be talking about what's going on. How do you work with your financing to get through this tough market? This is very important. And, you know, for all you people that want to be real estate investors, believe it or not, you are needed. Okay. We do need real estate investors, despite the fact what the government wants to tell you, we do need you because there are people out there that need to rent. And if you can be part of the solution, you should be. So go to thesimpleinvestor.com and make sure you register. We can't wait to see everybody here in the studio, if not on the webinar. And again, that is coming up Saturday, February the 3rd, 11 a.m. Don't miss out. By the way, we're going to be back at 3 p.m. today, and we're going to be joined by Bryn Lackey. That's a wrap for this week. I want to once again thank Richard for joining me. And of course, I'll be back next weekend as usual. I'm your host, Todd C. Slater. You've been listening to Simply Real Estate right here on News Talk 1010.